time now to go to Sunday school with the professor.
Hey, Professor, take it easy, will you?
Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helfer.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Good answer. Like the way you think.
KNBR 680, the sports league.
Brought to you by River Island, one of the country's top-selling master-planned communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kid's new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Island is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right, nice to be back with, how are you this morning?
Well, Marty, I'm hanging in. I'm hanging in here. Good to be here. And, I'm glad the weather's holding off. They tarped the field last night, and they had a little expectation of some possible showers, but it looks like it's fine, as you said. So that's good news.
Yeah, I was out there this morning, and it looked like I said to myself, it doesn't feel like rain, but, you know, things change in a minute, which brings me kind of to our first topic, and you guys went through it. Where were you? Pittsburgh? I forget where. Or Cincinnati, wherever it was. But in Cleveland yesterday, now they got the lake, and they've got storms coming off that lake. You know that. But they had a game scheduled for 4 o'clock. They thought a storm was coming. They're playing Tampa Bay. And at 4 o'clock, they said, we're not going to start this thing. Nothing happened. A little bit of wind, no rain, and they didn't start till 7 o'clock. Charlie Morton pitched for Tampa Bay. He hasn't lost a game in 18 starts, something like that. Said, all right, I stayed in the clubhouse. But it's kind of crazy to sort of, depending on weather forecasts, to start a game.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we've been involved with those. And that's always the most difficult thing, is trying to predict the weather. I know the weatherman has a tough job, especially coming off a lake or coming off the ocean. You don't know which way the storm's going to go. And it usually happens because, you know, a lot of times they'll get the managers involved and there'll be an agreement that let's hold off. We don't want to burn our starting pitchers, is why you try to delay it instead of saying, well, if it's not raining, let's go out and start the game. Yeah. And it happens a lot, actually, especially in the summertime, that, you know, storms are coming and say, we're going to be delayed a half hour. But what happens a lot as well is that storm doesn't come, just like that. To wait for 3 hours, it's extremely frustrating. And, you know, as many times that I say, you know what, let's just go out and play. And if the rain starts, the rain starts. Because our experience with the weather, it's very difficult to predict. And every groundskeeper, you know, they know their people, they're getting their information, but they're different all over the country. So it's a difficult thing to deal with.
Well, that's what they did yesterday, 3 hours. And as I said, Morton went out and pitched another great game. He hasn't lost in like 18 starts, whatever. But for 3 hours, he sat around, and he was cool about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's part of being a professional. You know, it was a 4 o'clock game, which is nice. The game wasn't starting at 7 o'clock at night, and then starting at 10, and I'm sure they have a day game today. So that makes it a little easier, you know, as a player or coach, meant to accept, saying, okay, you know, we don't want to lose our starter. They say it's going to rain. Let's wait till it goes through. But if they started at 7 o'clock at night, it's a little more difficult. It just makes for a long day. I do believe there should be restrictions on how long you can wait on the weather. Not just, you know, for the players, but more so for the fans and the workers and everybody else that's involved with it. It's a long time to wait.
Yeah, good point. Very good. Yeah. The crew that supports the ballpark. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We talked about that during that delay that you guys had. A trip's coming up, though. Now, Miami, look, I grew up in Miami. 4 o'clock every day from the Everglades, a storm would come in, and you probably went through that. You couldn't have batting practice and all that. Now it's, they got it covered, thank goodness. But then it's Baltimore, which, you know, you never know what's going to happen there. And then it's to the Mets in New York, and who knows that. But let's talk about the road trip a little bit, going to those cities.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head there with the weather in Miami. We were segueing from the rain into more rain. Thank goodness they have a dome down there in Miami. That was a great thing. You know, some players I've talked to said they think every stadium in a cold weather should be a retractable roof. Then you wouldn't have to deal with that weather. That would be something if we got to that point. But, when we used to play at old Joe Robbie Stadium, we very seldom hit. That storm would come in, and it would rain cats and dogs, as you know. That rain comes down in Florida. Anybody that's been to Florida, especially in the summertime. And then, you know, a half hour, 40 minutes or 15 minutes, it's gone, and everything's dry again, and it's getting hotter out there because that sun's baking you. So we don't have to deal with that in Miami. You know, they have that nice new ballpark there. And so it's always a difficult place to play, though, because there's not a lot of atmosphere. You know, it's one of those places you're staying on the beach, the hotel. You have a lot of Latins, have a lot of family, and people see them there. So you know, you gotta watch your P's and Q's, and you gotta be ready to play baseball down there because you know it could get you if you're not ready for it.
Well, it's a big park, and they've shortened it a little bit, but you guys have had trouble winning in that park. It's been trouble there.
Yeah, and I think some of the things I touched on could contribute to it, but, you know, it's baseball, and, you know, again, they moved the fences in a little bit.
I think so.
In that
I heard,
park.
I think I heard that.
You know, I've been watching on TV. I'm seeing balls hit like crazy all over baseball. We've talked about that before, so it'll be interesting to take a look to see, you know, how the ball is carrying in there.
They don't have that structure anymore, that artistic structure in the outfield. Remember that thing? When,
sure.
What did you think of that?
It was part of the whole scene.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think much of it. It's what they had. But, you know, it'd be nice to go down there and play well. It'd be nice to see some fans in the ballpark because it is close to a lot of our Latin players. You know, have family and friends come to see them. And, you know, it's good for them to be able to reconnect in a long season with some of their family and friends.
All right. I didn't think about that. Yeah, there are Sandoval, a lot of people. They live in Miami, so
yep.
a lot of family will be there. The professor is with us. Let's talk a little baseball, a little bit of stuff that happened this week. One, you and I haven't talked since Crawford's play last Sunday in Arizona on Adam Jones, and then the great pick by Belt on the play.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of ball. Where does that one rank?
Well, it ranks at the top because of it saved the game, right? You can make great plays throughout the course of the game, and, you know, don't get me wrong, they're great plays, but when that play is made, if he doesn't make the play, the game's over, and we lose. So it's at the top. Those types of plays, you know, whether it's during a regular season, you have plays like that in a World Series or a big playoff game, must-win game. They always have to go to the top because the meaning of the play.
You know, it's funny, and I got into it last week. I was down there, of course. It was nice to go home and see the house in Mesa.
Yeah.
But you win 4 of 6. You have a good week. And I said, all right, 4 of 6. You're coming home, you know, with Atlanta and Arizona. And now you go 1 and 5 coming into today.
Yeah.
What a sport, huh?
Well, you say it all the time. That's baseball, I think, is your quote. And, you know, that's the game. And, you know, it's hard to predict. You think you got a little mojo going and you're playing good and you come home. And, you know, we played a good team in Atlanta. And, you know, we haven't played our brand of baseball. We haven't played, you know, all areas have broke down a little bit. And you go through that through a long season, right? You're up and you're down. So, but you got to tighten the belt strap and give a little more of yourself when you're in one of these funks, I believe. You know, you have to give a little more of yourself. You can't try too hard, and that happens, right? We've been through all the gamuts. You know, guys try too hard. They try to do too much, and that compounds the problem. But I just think you got to be ready to go, have your focus, give a little more of yourself as if it's a playoff game, and make sure you're in the moment for 9 innings and try to turn things around.
No, good advice. Good advice. I kind of said that a little bit on the postgame show yesterday, talking about it. The professor is here. A couple of baseball plays this week. One, Samardzija. Ground ball back to him, and the shift was on. Longoria was a sort of shortstop. Crawford was behind the bag. And Samardzija went to throw the ball to the bag on a double play attempt, and nobody was there.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, it was a breakdown in communication. You know, we were in a shift, and these guys have been in a shift so many times now that, you know, it's not because they're unfamiliar with their positioning. But, you know, Samardzija got the ball. Crawford had coverage, and he started to break to the bag, but he saw Longoria going to the bag, too. And, you know, he realized that's why he hesitated, that he was going for the ball, not going to cover. And so that's little hesitation cost us. And Shark got the ball, and he knew Crawford had coverage. And then when that hesitation happened, he did try to use his instincts and just lead Samara. He's tried to leave Longoria going to the base, and it was a broken play. And that's where the play broke down. And you could say that, you know, Crawford being on the second base side is not used to seeing Longoria moving from the shortstop side, so it hasn't happened a whole lot. So the shift can put you in these uncomfortable positions. You know, he hasn't been on the second base side, dude. He's been on the shortstop side where he sees the second baseman go, but he knows he has coverage. So you could say it contributes to it a little bit. I think what we're trying to do is practice a little bit more in the shift positions in pregame. We do some of it in spring training. And, you know, they're professionals. They're in these positions a lot. I mean, the shift is going on. Shoot, we're shifting more in a game now than we did a couple of years ago on every batter. It seems like there's more shifts than non-shifts. So they're familiar with it, but, you know, a little more of that, even for the pitchers, you know, being involved with it would be a good thing. So we're trying to do some more of that in our pregame.
Yeah, interesting. You know, the shift is a question that comes up a lot. I know that it's frustrating to see a ball hit in the hole or where the guy would be playing. But when you look at baseball, and just random numbers, maybe 30,000 shifts going on now, and five years ago there were 1,200. So it does make a difference. It's changed left-handed hitters who hit ground balls, I'll tell you that. They might as well find a new profession if they're doing that. You got to get the launch angle and all that stuff. But I was almost shocked when I saw you last Saturday and Sunday or Friday sitting in front of your locker pregame, and it looked like you were studying for a bar exam or a trigonometry exam with all the colors and angles. And this, you had like five or six sheets with your glasses on, and you were in deep concentration, and this goes on all the time.
Yeah, well, we have more maps than Magellan had today, and we have to, you know, we have to be prepared just not for the starter, but every reliever that comes in the game on the positioning. And, you know, thank goodness, I mean, obviously you couldn't put, you know, it takes hours. It takes 3-4 hours of preparation to have the plan for every pitcher. The starter I would do on my own all the time, but now that we have Mike and Jack helping us prepare, our analytic gentlemen that are in the clubhouse and helping us, you know, they spend all afternoon looking at all the pitchers and evaluating the information, and they have people upstairs in the front office that help them as well, that break it down even more. It's just not them two. They have people helping them. So there's an awful lot that goes into it. And you're right, there still is an emotional response, just not for the players, but for myself and coaches. You know, when someone hits a ball in an area where no one's standing, you feel terrible about it. But the bottom line is, you know, the shifts are taking away a lot of hits. And if you don't think they are, just ask the hitters. Ask Brandon Belt how he feels about the shift and some of our hitters that hit into it all the time. And that's why you see the averages are down. And so, you know, it's a delicate thing. You have to be prepared. You have to adjust and go with it when it makes sense. And there's some that you stretch. You're in between. Should we shift or should we not? I prefer to play it conservative unless we're sure this is the best thing to do.
Yeah, boy, what a difference in the game of baseball. Look, you've been in it so long. Longest tenured coach in the history of the Giants. You're part of the furniture. You're part of this franchise forever. But what a difference, huh, of preparing for a game from when you first came up to now.
Well, it really is. And you couldn't do all this without the help upstairs to this level. And we've always done it. But the one thing that's a constant in this game, whether you're having help prepared or not, is pitch plan, how you're going to pitch the hitter, and pitch execution. And those two things are always in flux. Because you talk about, you know, pitch plan. You have a plan going into the game how we're going to pitch a guy. And all of a sudden the pitcher goes on the mound and the catcher's back there and they see this guy staying on the fastball away. They read his swing and now they want to bust him in. So that's where the shifts go wrong sometimes, because it's never a perfect science. It wasn't 20 years ago when you weren't shifting, and it's not now, because it's a human game and these pitchers have to be able to make the adjustments they feel to get the hitter out. And the catcher does the same thing. So your best laid plans in any part of the game, it's a game of adjustments, and that's sometimes where the shifts go wrong.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I told you the story a couple of weeks ago, the Dizzy Dean story with Ducky Medwick. You know, because Dizzy was in the next room and heard they're preparing for Ducky Medwick. He opened the door and said, "This is what you do. Throw it down the middle. He can't hit it there."
That's Tony Gwynn-esque, right?
Yeah,
Tony Gwynn was the same way.
Yeah, but the other thing is, and these stories are true, you get a hitter who's just all over it, and the catcher says, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tell the hitter what's coming." And they say, "Look, a curveball's coming," and that's the way they would do that.
Yeah.
Still, that can't happen today.
No. You would get in trouble for that. I think I told a story when one of our catchers in the minor leagues was giving the hitters what pitch was coming, and the umpire told our roving pitching coach was there, and he about killed the catcher. I mean, it wasn't a pretty sight. He got suspended, and he was out of the game. Yeah, well, you that doesn't go on. But, you know, it's pitch execution, too. I mean, look, nobody has perfect command. The ball's always not going to be where you want it to be. And you have to understand that when you're planning for a shift, when you got a pitcher that locates and a pitcher that doesn't locate as well. You consider that as well. There's so many variables, but
amazing.
The bottom line is it's taking away hits. There's no question about it.
And then you still have to coach third, right?
Yeah. I still have to coach third, yes.
Unbelievable. All right. I'm glad we go through this so people understand. It's the foundation of what goes on, and we tend to see the result, but you have to know what's underneath it all. So
that's
I think it's important to do it. I'm glad that we could go through it. A couple other defensive things. Pilar. The catch he made yesterday on Crone in the alley.
Yeah.
And how about Duggar the night before, the play he made?
Yeah, both of them. Great plays. And, you know, they get the double play on Pilar's catch, flying through the air.
I love that
play. You know, when a guy, you know, dies, when he leaves his feet in the outfield and he's flying through the air, I guess that's where he got the nickname Superman, right? Because you're flying through the air, catch the ball, come up, and have the presence of mind to get the ball in quickly to double off the man at first base. Now, unfortunately for us, the runner at third, I think it was Marte.
Jones, excuse me.
He runs very well.
What was he doing?
Well, he wasn't going to tag up, which you should immediately.
Yeah, he had nowhere else to go, right?
Right. You want to tag up. And I know Tony Perez-Chica, who was a teammate in mine with the Giant organization in AAA, who's their third base coach and their infield coach, he was screaming, you know, to tag. Jones did get back, and he had enough speed to cross home plate before we recorded the out at first, so that run did count. But we still got the double play, and they ended up picking the second run up on that. But great play all the way around. And then Duggar's, you know, he's played a great center field since he's moved back center field. He really has made and covered a lot of ground, made some good plays, great play 2 days ago, and covered a lot of ground out there. So he's been impressive in center field.
Yeah, I like, and now John Miller made a great call. A great call in the double play, and the run doesn't score. I mean, it's in his resume, you know. When they do his resume, that'll be in there.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he says, "But wait a minute, you know, they're complaining. They're going to replay it, you know."
Right.
And it's wiped out forever. I mean, it was one of the great calls because it's a great play.
Yeah.
You double the guy off, and the runner from third is dreaming. He's in dreamland.
Right.
And he doesn't score. And then they go to New York, and they've got the overview and all this kind of stuff, and that's what happens.
Right. Well, the force is off. Once he catches the ball, the runners could tag and advance at their own risk. So the runner at third tagged up and scored before we recorded
barely.
The out at first, barely. And like you said, if we didn't have replay, I don't think the umpires would have saw that he scored. You know, it all happened so fast, and they're focused on it. It would have been a tough play for them to probably get that one right.
Yeah, but the call is dissolved forever. You know,
yeah.
John's call, it was a great call. It was a very exciting play, very exciting play. We had Mark Simon on yesterday, who gives a lot of information to the broadcast crew, some analytical stuff, and everything is analyzed today, and Allie and I were talking about this earlier. He said they now categorize and analyze the plays where someone says, "Wow, what a play." And, you know, you see that a lot. And Joe Panik is one of the leaders in the major leagues. And, wow, what a play. How about that?
I'd say, wow, what a stat. I guess they break down everything. Good for Joe. I mean, Joe has played very, very good. What a bounce back year for him. You know, all the way around. We talked about the commitment this winter he made into, you know, slimming down and getting his quickness back and his first step and the work that he always puts in, but he felt he wanted to, change his game a little bit and it's really paid off. For him to have the most wow plays, that's really saying something. There's a lot of good second basemen in the league, and there's a lot of great plays out there. So hats off to Joe. He's playing very, very well.
Yeah, and he sort of solidified the top of the order. You know, he's getting on base.
Yes, he certainly has. And, you know, all around, offense, defense, and as a base runner. You know, he's one guy that I feel if we, you know, we get the right opportunity, we can put in motion. And I like what he can do with the plate, because, you know, he can hit and run. He puts the ball in play. And those players are harder to defend opposed to, you know, the all or nothing one way swing. So he brings something to the club that I think every team needs. Somebody that can move the ball and can do a few things, for you on the baseball field.
Yeah, I like it. He is having a good season.
Yeah.
A nice play. Belt had a typical 3-6-1 with Melanson. Man, that he is. These guys are just so smooth on that play. And then all of a sudden, the ground ball took his eye off it a little bit.
Yeah.
And what got me on that play, this low Castro. Have you seen this guy run?
Yeah, no.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
First of all, you hit him, and, you know, he gets hit all the time. He was up 30 times, got hit 7 times. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
But this guy is a jet. And the ball went past Belt, and Lo Castro, man, he just flew and he scored from second. What happened with Belt?
Well, we've been seeing this guy run a little bit too much. But I think he's got a little Joey Votto in him when that ball's thrown inside. You said he's been hit a lot because he leans into it. He's sticking his body part in there. I wish that was a reviewable call because he looks like a guy that's going to lean into the pitch and take it to get on base and use his speed. But back to Belt. You know, you have a man on third. There's nobody out, so we're playing the infield at halfway. You know, the guy at third, a ball on the ground, you're not going to risk getting thrown out at home if there's nobody out. Now, if there's one out, the infield's got to be in more because the guy at third, a lot of times, going to go. He's going to go on contact. He's going to push the envelope. But we play a little deeper in that scenario. So what happened to Belt was the ground ball was hit. It's, you know, it's a play he makes, you know, in his sleep. But as the ball was coming, he thought he had, you know, had it in his glove or he saw the hop. He looked up at the runner at third to see if he was going home or not, to see if he was going to have to throw home. And, I looked at the replay. I'm sure they showed it on TV, you know, him looking away from the ball. The ball may have, you know, bounced not where he thought or et cetera, whatever. He flat out missed it. So he took his eye off the ball basically.
Yeah. Boy, what a game, huh? Well, you know, it's funny this morning, we're getting into the foundation of what baseball is all about. And I was thinking about it today. Look, the team is struggling. You know, 1-5 on the homestand, 21-30 on the year. Dodgers are going crazy. You know, and there's a long way to go, 111 games to go. But what it is for me, it's coming to the park every day. It's like going to the movies every day. You're going to see a movie. It may be a great movie. You may see things that you'll never see again in a movie. It may have a great twist to it. It may have a great end. It may be sad. You may cry. But every day you come in here, you see a new story. And that's what keeps me going.
Yeah, well, that's a, you know, a great perspective. I'm sure the fans feel the same way about it. You know, it's a little different for us on the field. I mean, the beauty of it is you get to play every day. Whether you had a rough day yesterday or you're not playing well, you have a new day every day. Unlike football and other sports, you have to wait a week or a few days to redeem yourself. And, you know, you're gonna see the full gamut. There's no doubt about it. There's not many players. I don't think there's ever been a player, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you might know this, that didn't make an error on the field or make a mistake or not strike out or, you know, a play you don't expect. I remember it happened to me in the minor leagues, and, You know, when you're not playing good, it looks like, oh, you're mentally, you're not into it, and all those things you start to hear. But that's not the case, you know. I mean, it happens to you. You're playing every day, and you're going to experience everything in this game, whether you want to or you don't want to. You could be the smartest player in the world, and sometimes you're going to make a bonehead mistake or try to do too much, and it's going to look awful. So that's what you deal with. And as I said, you know, you got to be ready every day and give more of yourself when you go through these things, and keep your focus and concentration level where it needs to be.
Yeah, good point. I mean, but for me, it's the story.
Yeah.
This could be we may see a perfect game today.
Yeah, right.
Who knows what's going to happen today? I mean, we got Weaver and Sean Anderson, Florida State, and this is close to my heart. You know, Florida, my Florida Gators, you know, we got those two guys going at it. So I'm looking for, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I hope we come out on top. We
need, really?
I hope that happens. Yeah.
Let's start with that.
Well, yeah.
All right. The professor is here. We'll take a break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit of Mike Yastrzemski. Whoa. And I just like seeing the name in the lineup. And also, I'm going to give you three names of Giant players. And I'm going to ask you, if they weren't baseball players, what would they be? What would they do in life? And one's Samardzija. One is going to be Joe Panik. And the other one's Longoria. Now, we did this as an exercise the other day. We had a lot of fun with this. We had Sandoval, we had Dyson, and I forget who the other one was. But we had a lot of fun with this thing as to what their jobs would be.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you those three names when we come back. All right, more coming up right here with the professor on Sunday Baseball right here on the Sports League.
Beginning. There's a shot toward the gap, right center field. Racing after this, Pilar makes a headlong dive and a spectacular catch. The runner's going to score from third, but here goes the throw back to first. It's in time, a double play. And did the runner score? No, he did not score. The runner from third did not score. What a play by Pilar. And miraculously, he turns it into an inning-ending double play. It easily would have been a runner scoring from third on that catch. The D-backs are asking for a little extra few moments here to check the replay room, because they want to double-check whether he crossed the plate or not. But I was looking at it. I don't think he did. Well, here's the call from New York. Out at first and home. I think that signal means what?
I think that means the run is going to count.
The run does count. All right. They're saying that he did cross the plate before the ball was in Belt's glove at first base.
This is Brandon Belt of the San Francisco Giants. Now back to the Giants pregame show with Marty Lurie on KNBR 680.
How'd you like that call by John?
Great call.
It was one of the great calls. Really?
Yeah, it was. It was a great play, and it was an exciting play. Start the game off. It was... It was good, yeah.
All right. Well, it bothers me. This is one of the downsides of this replay thing, is that it takes that moment away.
Right. I get it, yeah. You know,
it just does. All right. Yastrzemski. Mike Yastrzemski is here and has certainly earned his way up, a longtime minor leaguer, about 6 years in the minor leagues. But he's a New England guy. Yastrzemski, you grew up there. You know, for me, I like seeing the name in the lineup. It's almost like a dream.
Well, it really is something. Even for me, I mean, his grandfather was, a player I watched growing up as a young kid. You know, back when you'd go through the whole lineup of a baseball team when you're playing wiffle ball, and you'd hit right-handed for the right-handed hitters, or Rico Petrocelli or Burleson, and then when Yastrzemski came up, you'd hit left-handed or Cecil Cooper or whoever it was. You know, so you always remember those days. You know, this game is so impelling and so important when you're a young kid. Yeah. You know, it's larger than life, and you idolize these guys. So his grandfather was a great player and a very unique name, and it's great to have him here with us. And I'm pulling for him. Anybody that spent that amount of time in the minor leagues, you know, hasn't been an easy road for him. And you do find a lot of good ball players that way. They persevere in the minor leagues. They weren't necessarily top prospects, and they persevere because they know how to play the game. And I'm looking forward to watching this kid play.
Yeah, 14th round pick of the Orioles out of Vanderbilt in 2013, and 2,500 minor league at bats, and here he is. But for me, it's just fun to see the name, and I'm with you. Sorry for Mac, who, you know, it just didn't happen.
Absolutely,
for him here.
Yeah.
You know that. But it's kind of fun to see him here. And the grandfather, you know, in 1967 for me, well, going down, you're too young to remember this, but going down the stretch, and you know, you can imagine what the stretch was. There are four or five teams. There's no playoffs
right.
in the American League. Four or five teams going down the last week had a shot to win the pennant. And for the last month, this guy, every time he came up, he got a big hit.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And that was Kari Strzemski. So he was a legend in New England for you, I imagine, right?
Well, yeah, he was. You know, Polish descent, too. The last Polish descent person we had on the team was Ryan Sadowski, who was a big hit up in Milwaukee when he started. There's a lot of Polish people up there. Wotus is Polish. And before that, it was Ron Paranowski. Yeah. So I've been joking in the clubhouse with some of the guys. It's about time we got another Polish guy on the club, so I have somebody to talk to.
Very good. Well, it's fun. It's a nice part of baseball as well. We had fun with this the other day. We come up with a few players and try to figure out what they would do if it's Sunday morning, so people relax a little bit, what they would do if they weren't baseball players. So I'm gonna give you three names. I'll throw one out to you. Joe Panic.
All right, well, this isn't in my wheelhouse, but I'll do my best here. Let's see, Joe Panic. Well, you know, Joe is such a good soldier. You know, he's a guy I think that would do something. If he wasn't in baseball, he would look to the future, and he'd make very, very good decisions. I think he'd probably be working in the finance industry, maybe in Wall Street. And very successful there. You know, he did go to college, and he'd use that degree to be a very successful Wall Street, maybe a trader, yeah.
All right, very good. I've got him as an airline pilot. I've got the uniform, the cap, the whole thing. And he's pulling a bag, and he's going on to Southwest as I'm waiting to get in line.
I'm going to ask him if he ever thought about being an airline pilot.
He's very responsible, trustworthy.
Yes. Trustworthy,
you know,
exactly.
Exactly. So, I feel
makes
that
sense.
If there's Eddie Montague, look. There's Eddie. I love Eddie. Eddie should be in the Hall of Fame, you know that?
Yeah, absolutely.
He should. Great umpire. All right, Samardzija. How about Samardzija? Where does he go?
Samardzija. Well, you know, Shark, he grew up in the game. You know, he grew up at Lou Piniella, you know, the old school, you know, how you play the game, this, that, and the other thing. And I know he likes to play cards, you know. You know, I think Shark would probably own a bar. You know what I mean? And he'd bartend because, you know, he's a people person. He'd be in there with the people. So I'm going to put him having his own sports bar. And he'd actually bartend quite frequently because he owned the place and he wanted to be there with the people.
All right, that's a good one. I originally had him in Home Depot as constructing things. But after listening to you, I'm going to have him as a dealer, a blackjack dealer in Reno.
There you go. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be good?
I think that would work with the Shark. Yeah.
Yeah, you got me. All right, very good.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Then we got Longoria. How about him? He's sort of a little bit of an enigma to people.
Yeah. Well, he's been with us 2 years now, and what I know of Longo, I could see him. I know he loves wine, right? He knows a lot about wine. That's one hobby of his, and I think he actually owns a restaurant. In Tampa, I'm not sure if he's part owner of a restaurant there, but I see him. He's a foodie too. I remember watching the piece on Giants Magazine with Amy G, and they had him cooking at his house. He likes food. He likes it. So the obvious choice, and he may already be doing this, is he owns a restaurant,
right.
And he's very involved in the restaurant, right? He has the menu the way he likes it. He's got the best chef in the world in there, and he's picking out the wine for the wine list.
All right, I like it. I've got him as a movie director. I've got him with the ascot and a beret.
I can
and a
see
little
that.
And a megaphone.
I can see
telling
that.
Telling people how to act.
He'd be good at that, yeah. As a movie director.
Yeah, I got him at that. All right, we'll give you one more just since it is Sunday morning, and we need a win today anyway, so just to lighten everybody up. Sandoval.
Sandoval.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Pablo, he couldn't be a librarian. I know that. He's not quiet enough for that. He brings it every day, his energy and his voice. And so, but he's probably going to be a DJ. I could see him down there in Miami, you know, in some nightclub, you know, spinning the tunes, and have that microphone there and have a fun time with that.
All right. That's a good one. I feel he's outgoing as well. I've got him as a maitre d' in a Las Vegas restaurant that he owns called Pablo's. And you walk in, and he's there in a tuxedo, and he greets everybody.
Okay. I love the name of the restaurant, Pablo's.
Pablo's.
Yeah.
That would be it. All right. We'll come back with more of these. You know, we sort of had fun with this. Sean Dunstan was there as well. So that's a Sunday morning. So you got a game today, and then it's off on the road trip, and May is almost down. April and
yeah.
May.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a long trip. Let's get this one today, and then we're off. And, you know, we're traveling tonight. We'll get in the wee hours in the morning, tomorrow morning, and have the off day in Miami, then three there in Baltimore, and up to New York. So. Yeah, let's get on our winning ways right here today and carry it into the trip.
All right, well, have a good time. And that is the professor. Nice to be with you.
Good to be here.
Hey, wait a minute, River Islands. We didn't talk about that. We got to at least mention River Islands this morning. I talked about it a lot on the show last night. The baseball field has opened up. The soccer fields are open. But the thing, and I'm going to throw it back to you here, living there now, it's summertime, with all the things to do, right at River Islands, that to me is what you get. And, you know, the commute, whatever it is, you're in the middle of everything, and you live there.
Right.
And you can have any kind of home you want. How about that?
Yeah, well, the place is growing. I know that. They're selling a lot of homes, and, you know, they have a lot in the future that they want to do in that community. You know, as you mentioned, the baseball field just opened up, and I got a video of Don Johns throwing out the first pitch over there at the ballpark, and I thought they had a great turnout for it. But they have a lot. They have a lot more plans in the works. It's, you know, a town that's going to be growing, and they're developing it, and is getting better and better. And to your point, the summertime, I think, with all the water and all the things you can do there, is well documented. I heard you on a show yesterday talking about it. You know, whether it's kayaking or boating or whatever you want to do, it's right there for you, and you don't have to go anywhere. So that's a big, big plus.
Hey, close to the valley for fruit, right?
Yeah,
Allie, fruit report. We do the fruit. Come on, Allie, we do the fruit report on it. Mid inning relief.
I mean, you do, but you're the one that does your research at the farmers market. So
right. I'm on it.
Yes, he's the expert.
On the fruit.
What was it, Casa de Fruta, when you go from...
yeah, you bring your RVs.
Is that 152?
When we would go from San Jose, when I managed in San Jose, whenever we went to Southern California, we would go through there, that winding road, and it was Casa de Fruta. Yeah, we never did stop.
Good,
you know,
knowledge.
If I was I'm going to ask Billy Hayes. He's managing that club. I'm going to tell him to stop the bus and get us some fruit. Bring us some fruit back from Casa de Fruta.
I've stayed there a couple times.
Have you?
Yeah, it's fun. I think you should go. Try it out.
Nice.
All right, before we let you go, Adam Copeland dropped in, and we're going to see Adam at the Public House. So Darren Lewis maybe has the record for the longest errorless streak as an outfielder. Were you here for Darren Lewis?
I knew Darren Lewis. I was managing in the minor leagues, but I was around the major league club. I don't know if he was here in 93. I went up to the big leagues for September call-up as a coach. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I know Darren. I've seen him play quite a bit. And, I remember that now that Adam mentioned that he had a long streak.
Yeah.
He said, I don't know how many innings it was, but he probably didn't make an error, or I don't know if that went through a whole year or not.
That's why Dusty named his kid Darren.
Right.
After Darren Lewis.
Well, another guy, I mean, that just a class individual on and off the field. And,
wow.
What a good man Darren Lewis is.
What a sport. What a sport. You meet a lot of people. All right, well, great to have you here. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you on the trip.
All right, Marty. Thanks.
All right, more coming up. That is the professor on Sunday morning. It's the best thing going. All right, more coming up in the Sports Leader.